Welcome to the OrthoClips podcast series, where we're going to discuss the latest hot topics and high-impact papers in orthopedic surgery. I'm your host, Saqib Rahman. Let's get this episode started. All right, episode 4 of the fast-moving season 6 of the OrthoClips podcast series. I'm Saqib Rahman, and we have a good one. This is a randomized control trial from October 2nd, JBJS 2024, so hot off the press, entitled Far Cortical Locking versus Standard Constructs for Locked Plate Fixation in the Treatment of Acute Displaced Fractures of the Distal Femur, a multi-center randomized trial. Lead author is Dr. Kelly Lefebvre from the University of British Columbia, and co-authors and the Canadian Orthopedic Trauma Society, or COTS, investigators. Many of you who may or may not know, COTS investigators are behind several very important multi-center randomized trials that have affected practice for many of us in orthopedic trauma. Kudos to them for pulling this off. And I want to say kudos to Zimmer Biomet for funding this. I don't have any financial relationship with them, but I appreciate that they put their money behind their product and funded good science here. So what is far cortical locking? Well, it's something that was meant to address a issue with potential unacceptable risks of non-union in distal femur fractures. So many reports say we have up to 20 to 25% non-unions when you do lateral locked plating of distal femur fractures. So why is that? Well, maybe it's because it's too rigid, it's too stiff, especially under the plate. So in 2010, Michael Botlang and investigators described in an animal model that they designed this far cortical locking to kind of balance things out. You have to see an image of this to understand it, but what they did is it's a lateral lock plate. The screw locks into the plate and it has threads on the far cortex or the medial cortex to engage the medial fragment. But at the near cortex, the lateral cortex, it's like over drilled a little bit to allow a little bit of micro motion. So it's a little bit more of a, what they feel is like a balanced locked fixation and possibly a little less rigid. I actually had the opportunity to meet Dr. Botlang at one of the conferences many years ago. I thought he was a really thoughtful individual and certainly was looking to see more clinical outcomes and experience. So here we go. We have this paper now. So this is a multi-center randomized control trial comparing far cortical locking with standard locked screw fixation in AO type 33A and 33C distal femoral fractures. It's the first randomized control trial and the largest study to date on this topic. Primary outcome was a composite of radiographic and clinical fracture healing at 3 months post-fixation. What do they find? Well, no statistically significant differences in that primary outcome between the far cortical locking and standard screw groups. Quote, in this multi-center randomized trial of adult patients with an AO/OTA type 33A or 33C distal femoral fracture, similar clinical and radiographic healing outcomes were observed in the far cortical locking and standard fixation groups. Subgroup analysis did hint at potential benefits of far cortical locking screws in younger patients and those with extensive medial comminution, but the results were not statistically significant. Interestingly, if you look at the JBJS article, you'll see there's a linked commentary, as often they do with some of the bigger, more important studies, and authored by Drs. Marshall and Marshall, and they kind of acknowledge the findings here and say there's, you know, a lack of significant benefit, but they highlighted the importance of the study, said this is still important in advancing our understanding of distal femoral fracture treatment. They also make a big deal about this medial cortex reduction. I'll quote, further investigation is needed to determine whether the stability of the medial cortex reduction and not the type of screws utilized in the proximal plate is the key factor in fracture healing. That is, they feel that, well, maybe the device is not that critical, and it's the reduction at the medial side that makes a bigger difference. So, key takeaways, current evidence doesn't really support a clear benefit of far cortical locking screws over standard screws when treating distal femoral fractures. Maybe it provides an option and potential benefits in certain patient subgroups, and ongoing research is probably needed. One thing the paper doesn't talk about at all is nail plate combos. It's 2024. That's the trend. And if you think about it, with what far cortical locking was trying to do was make things less rigid, allow some micro motion, and with nail plate combos, we're actually making things more rigid. We're throwing more metal in there. So this is something that I have a hard time reconciling myself. It's what do we need to do? Do we need to make it less stiff or more stiff? I don't know. So interesting paper. Those are my thoughts. So I have my two guests here today. I want to get your guys' thoughts. What do you guys think?
Always a pleasure to be here. Yeah, these are always a hot topic for discussion.
Absolutely. And we've got some really interesting data to unpack today from Lefebvre's recent trial on far cortical locking.
Yeah, that paper just came out in the October 2nd JBJS, and it's already generating a lot of buzz.
And of course, we can't talk about this paper without mentioning Marshall's commentary on it. He always brings up some really insightful points.
Oh, absolutely. Marshall always has a knack for cutting to the chase and highlighting what's really important.
So before we get into the nitty-gritty of the Lefebvre trial, can you remind us why FCL screws were developed in the first place? What problem were they trying to address?
Well, you know, when locking plates first came on the scene, they were a game changer for these fractures. They provided that stability that we were desperately looking for, but then some surgeons started to wonder if maybe all that rigidity could actually be a bit too much of a good thing.
Too much of a good thing? How so?
Well, the idea is that complete rigidity at the fracture site might actually hinder the natural healing process.
I see.
You know, might interfere with callus formation.
Right, because the bone needs a little bit of stress to stimulate healing.
Exactly.
It's like that old saying, use it or lose it.
Exactly. And there was some really compelling research from Botling and his group. They did some animal studies showing that a little bit of interfragmentary motion actually led to increased callus formation.
So you're saying the bone needs a little bit of a workout to really kickstart that healing response.
That's the idea. And that's where FCL screws enter the picture. They were designed to provide that stability, but also allow for some of that crucial micromotion.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So how do these FCL screws actually work? How do they strike that balance between stability and motion?
Well, unlike traditional locking screws that grab both the near and far cortices, these FCL screws only engage the far cortex. They have this unique design with a gap in those proximal threads, which creates a little void around the screw head, and that allows for a bit of controlled movement at the fracture site.
So it's like a controlled slippage, right?
You could say that.
So the concept is intriguing. But what did the evidence look like before Lefebvre's trial? Were surgeons jumping on the FCL bandwagon, or was there still a lot of uncertainty in the air?
To be honest, it was a mixed bag. We had some smaller studies, like Plumerum's study, which showed some early promise with FCL.
Right, I remember that one.
They found better radiographic scores at certain points, but by 1 year, there was no difference compared to standard locking screws.
So it was kind of a wait-and-see situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Which brings us to Lefebvre's trial. It was designed to be the big showdown, the definitive answer to the FCL question. So can you walk us through the details of this study?
Absolutely. So Lefebvre and his team put together this large-scale, multi-center, randomized controlled trial, you know, the gold standard when it comes to evaluating treatments. And they enrolled 193 patients with AOTA 33A or 33C distal femur fractures.
Those are the workhorse fractures, the ones we see day in and day out.
Exactly, the bread and butter. And they randomly assigned these patients to either an FCL group or a standard screw group.
Oh.
And here's where it gets interesting. In the standard screw group, they actually gave the surgeons the flexibility to choose between locking, non-locking, or a combination of screws.
So they weren't limited to a purely locking construct.
Right. Which makes a lot of sense because in real world practice, we're always tailoring our constructs based on the individual fracture and the patient.
Absolutely. It reflects what we actually do in the OR.
So we've got these two groups, one with FCL and the other with a mix of standard screw constructs. What were they looking at to determine if one was better than the other?
Well, they used a combination of radiographic and clinical healing at 3 months as their primary outcome.
To assess radiographic healing, they used the modified RUST score.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the clinical assessment, they used the FIX-IT score.
Right, the FIX-IT score,
yeah.
Which for those who might not be as familiar with, it evaluates things like pain, range of motion, weight bearing ability, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. It's all about how well the patient is actually functioning, not just what the x-ray looks like.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we want our patients to be able to get back to their lives.
Right.
not just have a pretty picture on a film.
Absolutely. Functional outcomes are key.
So after all that meticulous planning and execution, what did Lefebvre and his team discover? Did FCL live up to all the hype?
Well, that's where things get a little, maybe a little surprising for some. Yeah. Drum roll, please.
Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat here.
They found no significant difference in healing between the two groups at 3 months or at 1 year.
Wait, no difference?
Nope. Not a statistically significant one anyway.
Wow, that's unexpected. It seemed like FCL was going to be the next big thing in distal femur fracture care.
I know, right? There was definitely a lot of excitement surrounding it, but this large, well-designed trial suggests that maybe it's not the game changer some thought it would be.
So if there's no clear advantage, does that mean we should just scrap FCL altogether?
Well, hold on. Let's not jump to conclusions just yet. Before we make any sweeping judgments, I think it's worth taking a closer look at some of the details of the trial itself. There might be some nuances there that can help us make sense of these findings.
Okay, you've piqued my interest. Let's dig into those details.
All right, so one thing that really impressed me about this trial was its size and scope. I mean, 16 centers, 193 patients. That's a robust data set that carries some serious weight.
I agree. That definitely sets it apart from those earlier, smaller studies. And they were very meticulous with their methodology, allowing for those variations in the standard screw group, mm-hmm. which, as we said, is more reflective of real-world practice.
Precisely. And remember, their primary outcome was that hierarchical composite of radiographic and clinical healing at 3 months. They didn't just look at x-rays. They also took into account how the patient was functioning using that FFIX-IT score.
Right. Can you remind us what the FFIX-IT score actually entails?
Sure. So it's a validated outcome measure that looks at several key aspects of functional recovery after a distal femur fracture. It assesses things like pain levels, range of motion, the patient's ability to walk and climb stairs, whether they need assistive devices.
So it gives us a more well-rounded picture of how the patient is doing beyond just whether the bone is healing on x-ray.
Exactly. It's about the whole patient experience. And when they crunched the numbers, the average FFIX-IT scores were nearly identical between the FCL group and the standard screw group.
So functionally, patients in both groups were recovering at the same rate.
Precisely. They also looked at quality of life using the SF-36 survey. And again, no significant differences between the groups.
It seems like no matter how you slice it, FCL just did move the needle on outcomes in this study.
Yeah, that's the main takeaway for sure. It challenges that initial excitement around FCL being a faster or superior way to heal these fractures. Now, they did do some subgroup analyses looking at things like age fracture severity, the length of medial comminution.
Do they find any hints that FCL might be better for certain types of patients or fractures?
Well, there were some interesting trends. For example, it looked like younger patients and those with more extensive medial comminution might do a bit better with FCL.
Interesting.
But we have to be cautious with these subgroup analyses. The study wasn't powered to detect differences in these smaller groups, so we can't draw any firm conclusions from them.
Right. It seems like we need more research specifically targeting those subgroups to know for sure. So with all this in mind, what are your thoughts on Marshall's commentary? He seemed to have a slightly different perspective on the trial's findings.
Yeah, you're right. Marshall's commentary brought up a really important point that I think often gets overlooked in these discussions about implants. He emphasized that the key to successful healing in distal femur fractures, regardless of the screw type, might be achieving solid medial cortex stability.
Which makes perfect sense from an anatomical standpoint, that medial buttress is crucial for stability in these fractures.
Absolutely. And he pointed out that Lefebvre's trial didn't specifically analyze medial cortex stability, so it's possible that the lack of difference between the groups was because both groups achieved adequate medial stability regardless of which screw they used.
That's a very thought-provoking point. It's not just about the implant itself, it's about the overall construct and ensuring that critical medial support.
Exactly, and it really highlights the complexity of these fractures. We often get so focused on finding that magic bullet implant, but it's clear that there is a whole interplay of factors at play.
It's like we're trying to conduct an orchestra, making sure all the instruments are playing in harmony. The implant is just one instrument in that orchestra.
I love that analogy. It's so true. We need to consider the patient's overall health, their bone quality, the soft tissue envelope, the fracture pattern itself, and of course our surgical technique. It's about optimizing all those factors, not relying on any single technology to solve all our problems.
So where do we go from here? Does this trial change how we should be approaching distal femur fractures?
Well, I don't think it's a complete paradigm shift, but it has definitely given me pause. I think I'll be even more cautious about selecting patients for FCL. I'll probably reserve it for those younger patients with more complex fracture patterns where that bit of micromotion might be beneficial.
Yeah, I'm thinking along the same lines. And I'm going to be really paying attention to that medial cortex stability. Maybe even incorporate those stress exams or intraoperative CT more often just to be absolutely sure I've got that medial side locked down.
I think that's a very prudent approach. It's better to be overly cautious than to end up with a varus collapse and a revision surgery down the line.
Absolutely. And I think this trial really underscores the need for a more individualized approach to these fractures. We can't just blindly apply the same technique or implant to every patient. We need to carefully consider all those factors we talked about. The patient, the fracture, the soft tissues, and tailor our treatment accordingly.
Couldn't agree more. It's about being a thoughtful surgeon, not just a technician. We need to constantly evaluate the evidence, critically assess our own techniques, and be open to adjusting our approach as new information emerges.
Well said. It's a continuous learning process, and I think that's what makes this field so fascinating. There's always something new to learn, some new challenge to tackle.
And ultimately, it's all about providing the best possible care for our patients.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. We've unpacked the Lefebvre trial, dissected Marshall's commentary, and explored the broader implications for our practice.
Hopefully this deep dive has given our listeners a more nuanced understanding of the current state of far cortical locking for distal femur fractures.
And perhaps most importantly, it has sparked some critical thinking and inspired a renewed focus on achieving that all-important medial cortex stability.
Remember, the implant is just one piece of the puzzle. It's how we use it and all the other factors we bring to the table that ultimately determine our success.
Excellent point. Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up this deep dive. Thanks for joining us today for this fascinating discussion.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.